Finished his presidency, he looked in the mirror at a man who did not compromise his core principles for the sake of politics.
Of course, if the core principles are principles of a deranged human being, one would think someone would have stepped in and changed them, huh? Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio, the Chicken Hawk. Chucklenuts gave an interview to Great Britain's Sky News political editor Adam Bolton yesterday, Monday. So you know what that means. Moron sounds on the program tonight. I think we'll have a moment with Bob. What else do we have? All sorts of things. Let me share something with you right at the start of the program here. Dan Frumkin, who blogs and writes for the Washington Post, has revealed that a two-star, well, he hasn't revealed it, it's out there, a testimony for everyone to see, and a report, but the two-star general who led the Army investigation into the that horrible abuse at Abu Ghraib, seems like so long ago, doesn't it? That two-star general has accused the Bush administration of war crimes. Huh? No, not your 9 to midnight Eastern Time Nova M radio host, a two-star general who led the investigation into the abuse, is accusing the Bush administration of war crimes and, ta-da, is calling for accountability. Now, the report came out in 2004. About Abu Ghraib, and then Major General Anthony Taguba concluded that, quote, numerous incidents of sadistic, blatant, and wanton criminal abuses were inflicted on several detainees, end quote. And he went on to call the, in the report, the abuse systemic and illegal. And as Seymour Hersh reported later in the New Yorker magazine, he was rewarded for this, this candor, this honesty, by being forced into retirement. In other words, he was fired. This is what the Bush crime family does. This is what they do to federal attorneys. This is what they do to flag rank officers. This is what they do to department heads. You speak the truth, your ass is gone. Period. Now, there's an epilogue to Taguba's own investigation. It's in a preface to a Physicians for Human Rights report that is based on medical examinations of former detainees. The new report, General Taguba writes, quote, tells the largely untold human story of what happened to detainees in our custody when the commander-in-chief and those under him authorized a systematic regime of torture. This story is not only written in words, it is scrawled for the rest of these individuals' lives on their bodies and minds. Our national honor is stained by the indignity and inhumane treatment these men received from their captors. The profiles, continuing the quote, the profiles of these 11 former detainees, none of whom were ever charged with a crime or told why they were detained, the profiles are tragic and brutal rebuttals to those who claim that torture is ever justified. Through the experiences of these men in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo, we can see the full scope of the damage this illegal and unsound policy has inflicted, both on America's institutions and our nation's founding values, which the military, intelligence services, and our justice system are duty-bound to defend. Continuing the quote, in order for these individuals to suffer the wanton cruelty to which they were subjected, a government policy was promulgated to the field whereby the Geneva Conventions and the Uniform Code of Military Justice were disregarded. The UN Convention Against Torture was ignored. After years of disclosures by government investigations, media accounts, and reports from human rights organizations, there's no longer any doubt as to whether the current administration has committed war crimes. Do you hear this? The only question that remains to be answered is whether those who ordered the use of torture will be held to account. End quote. So if war crimes were committed, who's responsible? Huh? Tom Lasseter, in today's installment of this McClatchy newspaper series on the U.S. detention system, which is a major undertaking, Lasseter writes, quote, "The framework under which detainees were imprisoned for years without charges at Guantanamo and in many cases abused in Afghanistan was not the product of American military policy or the fault of a few rogue soldiers. It was largely," Lasseter writes, "the work of five White House, Pentagon, and Justice Department lawyers who, following the orders of President Bush and Vice President Cheney, reinterpreted or tossed out the U.S. and international laws that govern the treatment of prisoners in wartime, according to former U.S. Defense and Bush administration officials. The Supreme Court has now struck down many of their legal interpretations. It ruled last Thursday that preventing detainees from challenging their detention in federal courts was unconstitutional." Lasseter goes on, "The quintet of lawyers who called themselves the War Council drafted legal opinions that circumvented the military's code of justice, the federal court system, and America's international treaties in order to prevent anyone, from soldiers on the ground to the president, from being held accountable for activities that other times have been considered war crimes." Lasseter continues, "The international conventions that the United States helped draft and to which it's a party were abandoned in secret meetings among these five men in one another's offices. No one in the War Council has publicly described the group's activities in any detail, and only some of their opinions and memorandums have been made public. Only one of the five War Council lawyers remains in office, David Addington, the longtime legal advisor and now chief of staff to Dick Cheney. The other members were Alberto Gonzalez, first the White House counsel, then the Attorney General, William Haynes, the former Pentagon General Counsel, former Justice Department lawyer John Yoo, and some thug named Timothy Flanagan, a former deputy to Gonzalez." No, it's not just a couple of liberal talk show hosts now who are accusing these filthy bastards of war crimes. It's out there now. Everybody, human rights organizations, reporters doing massive studies on this. A former two-star general who conducted the investigation into the tortured Abu Ghraib. War crimes. Crimes against humanity. War crimes. Bush, Cheney, and these five scum who took their orders from Bush and Cheney. Make it legal, boys. Give us a framework in which we can all work. Come on, boys. That's why you're here. And John Yoo is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley? What in the goddamn hell is up with the regents of the University of California? This man is a war criminal. Why didn't you bastards hire Adolf Eichmann? Why didn't you let him teach a course on statistical analysis? University of California, shame on you. How disgusting. How putrid that you have a war criminal, an international outlaw, a son of a bitch who advocated and designed torture protocols. And you're allowing him to teach. And anyone in the university system in California that's taking a course from this man, two things, shame. The other thing, why?
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Now, having shared with you the accusations by a former flag rank military officer, two-star general, who led the investigation, as rickety as that investigation must have been, because he was investigating his own people, and then was fired, removed from office, forced in retirement, however you want to say it, because he attempted to tell just a bit of the truth of the torture policies, and is now advocating that those members of the Bush crime family who were involved in this were involved, in fact, in war crimes and need to be held accountable. That can only mean one thing. That means trial. That means to be put on trial. Either in the United States Senate or in an international war crimes tribunal, but the person stopping it is Nancy Pelosi. One person stopping it. Is she a co-conspirator? Must be. Must be as guilty as Bush. How about that? Not just the president and the vice president are criminal lawbreakers, but odds are the Speaker of the House is a criminal lawbreaker. Why else would Nancy Pelosi prevent the Constitution from operating? People a hell of a lot more intelligent than she wrote the goddamn piece of paper, as Bush puts it. And she's the one standing in the way. Interview with Bush and Pickles a couple of days ago in the UK, in London, I guess. Sky News political editor Adam Bolton interviewed these two clowns. And he got some interesting answers. Here's the first slice of this interview. Bush explains why he regretted his tough Texan talk about getting Osama bin forgotten, dead or alive. He doesn't regret the war, you see. Like we mentioned this earlier this week. Just the language. Mr. Bolton says, have you ordered a special effort to take him before you leave the White House?
Have you ordered a special effort to take him before you leave the White House?
Well, I said dead or alive right after September 11th. It's an unfortunate statement I made. But inherent in that statement is our desire to bring him to justice. And, you know, I read somebody said the headline said Bush orders special hunt for Osama bin Laden. You know, it's a little bit of press hyperventilating. After all, that's what we've been doing ever since September the 11th.
Did you think it was an unfortunate statement when he used the Wild West language?
Tell the truth.
Sort of.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, when I got home, she made a few comments.
Why? Because it was just inappropriate?
Well, I don't know why exactly. Just didn't sound serious, really, I think.
Well, because it makes it look like I like war. And I don't. And that's why. I mean, it's...
And it was the wrong message.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just... It was unscripted. I spoke my mind. And, you know, it just sent the wrong signal. I didn't realize it at the time, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't have sent it.
Yeah, you didn't realize it because you're a coked-up moron who has more burned-out synapses than an entire institution full of schizophrenics. Right? But listen to the laughter. They both laugh. Pickles... And George, did you think it was an unfortunate statement when he used the Wild West language? Bush, tell the truth. Mrs. Bush, sort of. It's a big goddamn joke to these people, to all of these people. The only person it's not a joke to is Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is a classic serial killer. No matter how much blood he can cause to flow, he wants more. He wants to see it all over the place, in country after country. Only Cheney takes the idea of serial murder to the next level. This son of a bitch has the power to legalize it, which is exactly what he's done by using his cadre of criminal attorneys, not criminal defense attorney, criminal attorneys, and his ham puppet, this moron, sitting for an interview with Sky News. We have some more from Adam Bolton's interview with George Bush and Pickles after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, back to the Sky News interview with that. That's, remember, Sky News is a Murdoch company in the UK. The political editor there, Adam Bolton's interview with Chuckle Nuts and Pickles. From a couple days ago. Now, the next part of the interview, Bolton asked if the massive negative attitude most normal people in the world feel towards Bush has had a negative effect on either of them. And this delusional duo seem to be immune from the opinion of the so-called little people. And even worse, Pickles actually thinks we appreciate her husband's hideous little reign of terror and destruction.
Mr. Bush, this has been perhaps the most controversial presidency because of what happened on 9/11 and since, I think, certainly that I've ever covered. And there's been a lot of criticism of your husband and his administration, people saying, you know, this is the good riddance tour and the worst presidency ever and all that. I mean, that must have hurt a lot, you and your
family.
Well,
it does bother me, of course. I, like everyone, you know, I hope my husband would be popular. You know, people want to be popular. But on the other hand, I know what he's really like. And I know how serious these times are for our country and for the world, and that he's made the very tough decisions that I think people would want their leader to make, and I know Americans appreciate.
First of all, popularity is fleeting.
Appreciate?
And I want it to be said about George W. Bush that when he finished his presidency, he looked in the mirror at a man who did not compromise his core principles for the sake of politics or the Gallup poll or the latest, you know, whatever. And you can't lead in this world if you're chasing something as temporary as a popularity poll.
Oh, Jesus, give me a break. Sorry about the soundtrack in the background. I feel like I'm sitting here listening to a Pink Floyd album with the TV on in the background. I don't know where that came from, but this is astonishing. Astonishing. Pickle says he's made the very tough decisions that I think people would want their leader to make, and I know Americans appreciate. Will somebody tell her that her husband's approval rating is approaching single digits? What? How many Valiums did this woman take? Americans appreciate. Mrs. Bush, your husband is a goddamn murderer. He is a war criminal. These are not tough decisions. These are the decisions of a madman. No one in this country, except people in the oil industry, appreciate your husband whatsoever. He's a thug, Mrs. Bush. And you have breakfast with him every morning? You turn your back when he's in the room? Are you out of your mind? What happens if God tells him to kill you, like God told him to invade two countries? What happens then, Mrs. Bush? And speaking of himself in the third person, what the hell does this freak think he is? He's in a country where they speak English with a bit of an accent, and he thinks all of a sudden that he can adopt the royal third person? Well, I want it to be said about George W. Bush. That's not me. That's that thing sitting over there somewhere. That when he finished his presidency, he looked in the mirror at a man who did not compromise his core principles for the sake of politics. Do you know how much truth is in that statement? Do you know how much indictable truth is in that statement? Do you know how much punishable truth is in that statement? He looked in the mirror at a man who did not compromise his core principles, which are what, George? Violating the law, invading countries that have done nothing to us, destabilizing countries all around the world, and committing mass goddamn murder. Oh, and authorizing torture. Those are your core principles. And you don't look in the mirror and see a raving lunatic looking back at you? You miserable bastard. Hopefully, somewhere on this earth, you will face justice, because I don't think you're going to face it here, are you? Finally, the giggling killer actually blames media outlets who reported on the torture and killings and abuse of foreign prisoners. He blames them as slanderers of America. Doesn't sound like someone who is supposed to be president. Sounds like the kind of vomit that would come out of the mouth of someone like Sean Baby Jesus Hannity. But this isn't news. The Bush crime family has always blamed the media for reporting the truth. When they do report the truth of their war crimes and their human rights abuses, and they're torturing, so little truth dribbles out through this putrid, putrid national media, with a few glaring exceptions, of course. But even that is too much for Bush. Bolton says, I've heard you talk about freedom. I think every time I've seen you, and yet There are those who would say, look, let's take Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib and rendition and all those things. And to them, that is the, you know, the complete opposite of freedom.
Of course, if you want to slander America, you can look at it one way. But you go down, what you need to do, I think I suggested you do this at a press conference. You go down there to Guantanamo and take a look at how these prisoners are treated. And they're working it through our court systems.
Oh my
we
God.
Are a land of law.
Oh my
but the
God.
Supreme Court have just said, ruled against what you've been doing down there.
But the district court didn't, and the appellate court didn't.
The Supreme Court's supreme, isn't it?
It is. And I accept their verdict. I don't agree with their verdict. And it's not what I was doing down there. This was a law passed by our United States Congress that I worked with the Congress to get passed and signed into law.
It looked like an attempt to bypass the Constitution to a certain extent.
This is a law passed, Adam. We passed the law.
Bypassing
the Constitution means that we did something, outside the bounds of the Constitution.
Really?
We went to the Congress and got a piece of legislation passed. And so
which is now being struck down.
It is. And I accept what the Supreme Court did. And I necessarily don't have to agree with it.
Oh, my God.
And my only point to you is that, we certainly wish Abu Ghraib hadn't happened. But that should not reflect, America. This was the actions of some soldiers.
This was the... See? You see? You see? Not only is this guy a torturer, a killer, a liar, a sneak, and a coward, he continues to shove this off on people who were following the orders that came from him and Cheney and these five vampiric bastards whose names I called out earlier in the program. And still he does it. Still. George W. Bush does it. There is no question this man is a war criminal. Not on the level, although given a chance, he would rush to it. Not on the level of a Hitler or a Stalin or a Pol Pot. Well, Pol Pot, maybe. Not on the level of a Mao. But this miserable son of a bitch is a war criminal of the highest rank. And he sits there with one of Rupert Murdoch's butt boys in this interview and talks as though what he did was proper, correct, because, Congress passed a law. And as Bolton had to point out, yeah, but it's been declared unconstitutional. Well, not by the district court or the appellate court, it wasn't. Jesus H. Christ. And Nancy Pelosi says, no impeachment. Nancy Pelosi is apparently involved in a conspiracy to defeat the Constitution, to perpetrate war crimes, to advocate for torture, and to participate in mass murder. Nancy Pelosi is a co-conspirator. Is she not? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
When Estonita, Texas, did your handguns concealed, I proudly sat right down and signed my name. I'm George W. from Texas. We leave the states in dirty air.
We ride from Texas with polluted air.
I'm George W. from Texas. We lead the states in dirty air.
Grandma and
number one.
Air.
We could save the last sea turtles, but they don't vote, so I don't care. Compassionate conservative, don't know what it means. It's something we cooked up for press release. Texas leads the world in the death penalty, but lethal injections not so.
because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Now, a moment ago, I quoted the part of the preface or the introduction to this new report on torture from Physicians for Human Rights. The preface was written by former General, Major General Taguba, the man who conducted the first investigation of Abu Ghraib, and the man who says that the Bush crime family committed war crimes and should be held accountable. There's more in this this report. For example, medical examinations, Reuters news agency reports, of 11 former terrorism suspects held by U.S. troops found the proof of physical and psychological torture that has resulted now in long-term damage. These are people never charged with a crime. Please understand that, okay, and have since been released. They were tortured for sport. Mistreatment cited by the men included beatings and other physical and sexual abuse, isolation, forced nakedness, and being forced in painful stress positions with hands and feet bound. The report said, quote, the evaluation provides evidence of violation of criminal laws prohibiting torture and of the commission of war crimes by U.S. personnel. There it is again. War crimes. Also today, three former U.S. interrogators. Three former U.S. interrogators told a seminar that abusive techniques, torture, is counterproductive and urge that these techniques be banned. Joe Navarro, former senior FBI interrogator, said at an event hosted by the Center for Strategic and International Studies and Human Rights First, quote, these coercive techniques, torture, are not working, end quote. Navarro said soldiers in the field who tried to apply vague administration-developed guidelines, Bush, Cheney, and the five criminal attorneys who tried to apply vague administration-developed guidelines on interrogations reported that they, quote, in fact, were torturing, end quote. They were telling on themselves. Yeah, we were torturing. We stomped the hell out of the bastards. We broke their testicles. We kicked them. We beat them. We slammed their heads against the concrete. We hung them by their arms. And on and on and on. Physicians for Human Rights said its report gave the most detailed account, supplemented by medical evidence of detainees tortured at the hands of U.S. personnel. The report said seven of these particular 11 had considered suicide. Four of the men arrested in or brought to Afghanistan between 2001 and early 2003 were later sent to Guantanamo. They were held for an average of 3 years before being released without charge. After being tortured, the other seven were detained in Iraq, most in the notorious Abu Ghraib prison in 2003, and also released without charge after being tortured. Alan Keller, one of the medical evaluators for the study, said, quote, as a physician with more than 15 years of experience evaluating and caring for torture victims from all over the world, the torture and abuse these men were subjected to just in Abu Ghraib and the resulting trauma are second to none. Leonard Rubenstein, president of the advocacy group Physicians for Human Rights, said the men, particularly those held in Iraq, described, quote, gratuitous cruelty, end quote, by U.S. personnel. Rubenstein said, quote, another key finding is that the authorized techniques, many of which themselves amounted to torture, begat yet additional forms of torture, proving once again that once torture starts, it can't be contained, end quote. The report gave one example of the case of a man named Amir, arrested by U.S. forces in Iraq in August of 2003. Amir said while Abu Ghraib prison, he was placed in a foul-smelling room and forced to lay face down in urine while he was hit and kicked. He was also sodomized with a broomstick and forced to howl like a dog while a soldier urinated on him. After a soldier stepped on his genitals, he fainted. Amir experiences physical and psychological symptoms nearly 4 years after being released, the report said. While at Abu Ghraib, he was placed in a foul-smelling room and forced to lay face down in urine. Doesn't say here if it was his or someone else's. While he was hit and kicked, he was also sodomized with a broomstick. He was sodomized. This is us! This is what we do now, Truth Seeker. This is what Nancy Pelosi refuses to hold these bastards accountable for. And since no one will hold them accountable, you and I are guilty. How many times when you were a kid growing up, if you're over a certain age, and you heard the stories of the atrocities in Nazi Germany, how many times did you sit there and say, what in the goddamn hell was wrong with the German people? They were complicit. They wanted the Jews to burn. They did nothing. Well, Guten Tag. Guess what? He was also sodomized with a broomstick and forced to howl like a dog while a soldier urinated on him. After a soldier stepped on his genitals, he fainted. We're finished now with the torture segment of the Molloy program. So this will give you a chance to purge, clear out your mind and your stomach and your ears, and come back if you are able to do so after the break, and we will continue with the program. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Emily in Chattanooga sent me an answer here to my question about Nancy Pelosi being a co-conspirator. Hi, Mr. Molloy. I'm currently studying criminal justice as my major in college, and the legal definition of a co-conspirator, in summarization, is basically a person who knowingly is helping a criminal with his or her act. It can be something as harmless as driving the getaway car to robbery. Even though you personally didn't rob the store, you're still in trouble for participating in the event. So going by that example, Nancy Pelosi is helping to drive the car. She might not be in as much trouble as the person who did the actual crime, the robbery, but she would still get in trouble for driving the car and not doing anything to stop it. If you know that someone is doing a crime and you help them in any way, you are part of the crime. Now, if she doesn't know she's helping in the crime, which Emily writes, I fail to believe, she would get in trouble and would probably get off at least with a very minimum sentence, like maybe community service. Hope that helps. Emily, it helps a lot. Thank you, Emily. Now, the torture of foreign nationals is one thing, but the experimentation on American troops is something else again. Have you heard about this? The Washington Times, in a joint investigation with ABC News, is reporting on the results of that investigation. They have concluded that, quote, mentally distressed veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan are being recruited for government tests on pharmaceutical drugs linked to suicide and other violent side effects, end quote. Let me repeat that. Son of a bitch. Mentally distressed veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan are being recruited. Hi, soldier. We want you to do this. But, soldier, that's an order. Are being recruited for government tests on pharmaceutical drugs linked to suicide and other violent side effects. End quote. Now, I would suggest, even to you conservatives or Republicans who are listening, will you ever get your heads out of your own asses? The Republicans hate the military. The Republicans, especially under Bush and Cheney, are destroying the military. They have zero respect for veterans. The only good veterans to these people are ones that are dead, that come home in coffins or boxes much smaller than that, or in urns. That's it. Those are the veterans that Republicans adore. For example, the Veterans Administration took 3 months to alert its patients and guinea pigs about severe mental side effects in testing some new anti-smoking drug called Chantix. In today's press briefing, White House spokesman Tony Fratto called the investigation by the Washington Times and the ABC irresponsible journalism, complaining that he had to watch the awful reporting. Another one of these miserable son of a bitches. This is Tony Fratto. Here's what he said. Here's the quote. I saw the reporting in your paper, and I think it was ABC this morning. I actually thought some of it was some of the most, certainly at least what I saw on television this morning, was some of the more irresponsible reporting that I've ever seen in terms of taking what this one, the experience of this one veteran, and trying to leave the impression that this was a situation for all veterans. And to try to imply that, and in fact, not even imply, I see the word scrolled on a television screen this morning, that the VA is using our veterans as guinea pigs. I thought that was one of the most awful things I've ever had to watch on television. You miserable little bastard, you. I think it's Think Progress. Right, if Fratto read the story, instead of simply catching the scroll on a television screen, he'd know that thousands are potentially affected. Nearly 1,000 veterans were enrolled in just the anti-smoking studies. Furthermore, the VA and other agencies are currently conducting 25 tests on 4,796 veterans, more than half of whom are just returning from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And in his criminal ravings today, Tony Fratto also praised what he called the wonderful leadership of VA Secretary James Peake. This is the guy who recently said that concerns about PTSD in veterans are overblown. You son of a bitch. Let's take Mr. Peake and Tony Fratto, dress them up in standard issue combat protective gear, give them a weapon, and put one of these filthy pigs in Baghdad and the other one in Kandahar, and then step back. You want to do that? Hey, Tony. Hey, James Peake. Why don't you guys do that? And if you survive, Peak, come back and tell the other members of your crime family how PTSD is overblown. It's not really real. It doesn't stop. I'm sorry to depress you. I'm sorry to have this kind of a program. I hate this kind of a program. So what are we going to do? I'll tell you what we could do. I'll tell you what we could do. It was Jack writes, good evening, Mike. I was going through the channels tonight with the sound muted, as I always do at 6:30 p.m. to get a glimpse of the evening news, if you want to call it that. With over 61 people killed in Iraq yesterday and the horrendous flooding, which has devastated most parts of Iowa, Indiana, and the Midwest, the CBS Evening News lead story tonight was about Tiger Woods, who cannot play the rest of his 2008 golf season because of a torn ligament in his leg. I couldn't believe my eyes. I forget the anchor's name, not that it matters, but they had a doctor on right next to him with an artificial knee, showing the American people the extent of Tiger Woods' injury. Son of a bitch, Jack writes. Here's a golfer who, including endorsements, has made almost $1 billion in earnings and will never, ever have to worry about income for the rest of his life. And yet there are people, hardworking people in the Midwest, who've lost their homes forever. And this is what CBS feeds us. And then Jack gets a little bit rattled. These no good rotten bastards, he writes. It brought tears to my eyes. It is so damn sickening. The corporate media doesn't give a rat's ass about the Midwest or its people. Mike, we've lost this country. This isn't America. It's over. The son of a bitch Bush won't even visit the Midwest until when? Thursday? What a tragedy. Jack. Now, Jack, take a deep breath. Tiger Woods is an important person. And if CBS News wants to lead with that story, you know, on ABC News, or was it NBC, they didn't report it until the B block, after the first commercial. And I was just thrilled. Just thrilled. It was not, and I think it was NBC, that's right, NBC, because not even Tim Russert's wake was in the A block. They actually had about 45 seconds, or maybe a minute or two, for the floods and what else? Oil or something? I don't even remember. But I do remember because I was mentally noting, where are they going to put Tim Russert's wake and Tiger Woods? And sure enough, on ABC, or was it NBC? Bless their hearts. They waited until the B block. That's the group of stories after the first commercial. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soldiers, fortune, we will fight for no country, but we'll die for good pay. Under the flag of the greenback dollar or the peso down Mexico way. Might go back to Georgia and settle down quiet somewhere.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour, Lauren writes regarding the war criminal charge. Mike, isn't simply illegally declaring war on Iraq a war crime in its own right? Yeah, and there wasn't even a declaration of war, Lauren. It was just one man's madness, George W. Bush's. A.E. writes in, Mike, doing a heck of a job, the regional director of FEMA today said the victims of the floods in the Midwest shouldn't expect the federal government to give them sufficient recovery help. Instead, he says, they should turn to faith-based and non-governmental organizations. Uh, Oh, and AE writes, the administration is once again saying offshore drilling is the best way to reduce oil costs. They don't mention that it could be up to a decade before oil from these new wells reaches the market. AE. Yeah, well, not only that, but somebody sent me an email. 18 billion barrels is what is projected to be there, and the world uses about 68 billion barrels, what, a day? A year? I don't know. So, what does that figure out to, Truth Seekers? And, who do you think will profit from that? Us, in seeing the lowering of our utility bills? Or the oil companies, as they feed the huge capitalistic machines of China and India? Huh? Prairie 2 writes, under the subject line, you can't win if you don't play, or even if you do. New from the people who brought you Baghdad Roulette, it's the River Levy Lottery. Your kid's off in Iraq? Take his place with the National Guard sandbagging on your town's levee. Pile the bags higher than the people across the river and save everything you worked for while they wash away. More fun than you've had since Vietnam. Even more thrills. For even more thrills, try, is that bridge safe? Or our home games, Chinese medications. Or the kids' favorite, eat that tomato, I dare you. Watch for more games from your friends at the GOP. People are getting way too creative, making the talk show hosts look mundane. Yeah, Bush today urged Congress to end a federal ban, I believe started by war hero Pappy Bush, federal ban on offshore oil drilling. And George wants to open a portion of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, you know, ANWR, for exploration. He says those steps and others would lower gasoline prices and, quote, strengthen our national security, end quote. Yeah, that's what he said. He says that, you see, scientists have developed innovative techniques to reach ANWR's oil with virtually no impact on the land or local wildlife. I urge members of Congress to allow this remote region to bring enormous benefits to the American people. It just doesn't stop with these sons of bitches, does it? It just doesn't stop. Destroy everything. Drill holes in everything. Right? Huh? And these filthy, scum-sucking Republicans in this country sit back and say, well, what's wrong with that? Just a bunch of goddamn deer up there. Who cares? And they faked that picture of the polar bear anyway. Oh, Bush also urged weak-kneed Congress to approve the extraction of oil from shale on federal lands, something that he said could be done far more economically now than a few years ago. Of course, the toxic waste that's produced from that process he doesn't mention, that usually winds up going into groundwater and aquifers and, you know, places like that. And then Bush tried to take full political advantage to help John McCain by saying that the soaring fuel prices could be ended if we would all listen to the imaginative Republican lawmakers, and if we'd stop listening to the Democratic majority in Congress who are obstructionists on energy policy. That's what he said. The Republican lawmakers are imaginative and forward-looking. Yes, and the Democratic majority in Congress are obstructionists on energy policy. The Republican lawmakers in Congress, Mr. Bush, do for you every day what Monica Lewinsky did for Bill Clinton as often as they could, you know, have pizza or whatever. And you know it, George, and the Republican members of Congress know it. They are a pack of whores. No offense to sex workers. The U.S. Congressional building has become a cat house. That's all it is. It's a huge whorehouse, Mr. Bush. And you and Cheney stop in and relieve yourselves as you will. And the members, the Republicans and a lot of the Democratic members of that house are happy to accommodate you. Because, you know, if the price is right, why not? He says, I know the Democratic leaders have opposed some of these policies in the past. Now that their opposition has helped drive gas prices to record levels, I ask them to reconsider their positions. Yeah, that's what he said. Six before the hour, and guess what? It's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Yes, Truth Seekers, once again, tonight's episode of A Moment with Bob. Hey, Mike, last night you asked, how do we, the American people, get to the point where when we hear about these atrocities, we do nothing? That's my question. Well, the short answer is we've gone crazy. Long answer? As Inigo Montoya from The Princess Bride would say, let me explain. We've been living in the belly of the beast for so long, we're delusional. America has always shown its crazy face to the rest of the world since we took our first faltering steps toward imperialism. We've tried not to go crazy domestically, but the Dark Ages break out with alarming frequency. The Sedition Act of 1918 made it a crime to utter, print, write, or publish any disloyal, profane, scurrilous, or abusive language about the United States' form of government. Anti-war protesters were arrested and imprisoned by the hundreds as speaking out against the draft and the war became illegal under this law. During the commie purging hysteria that began in 1947, thousands of Americans were blacklisted for having once had ties, however tenuous, if at all, to the Communist Party. Here's a fact from that period that gave me several severe historical whiplash. In 1947, Dalton Trumbo, along with nine other writers and directors, was called before the House Un-American Activities Committee as an unfriendly witness to testify on the presence of communist influence in Hollywood. Trumbo refused to give information. Though only convicted of contempt of Congress, he was blacklisted and in 1950 spent 11 months in prison in the federal penitentiary in Ashland, Kentucky. John Bolton and Harriet Myers won't be going to a federal prison anytime soon, as long as Attorney General Michael Mukasey blocks any prosecution. But we were talking of national insanity, weren't we? In 1987, the FCC abolished the Fairness Doctrine in broadcasting. This was the trigger, and it was pulled deliberately by corporate America and blew our collective brains out. Rush Limbaugh has been on the air for over 20 years, Fox News for 12. I submit that a lot of the delusional thinking of this country has iatrogenic origins. I mean to say our insanity isn't homegrown, it is imposed. Did you know the media can legally lie? In February 2003, a Florida Court of Appeals unanimously agreed with an assertion by Fox News that there is no rule against distorting or falsifying the news in the United States. Well, if you want to drive someone crazy, lie to them for over 20 years and tell them that the lies that you've told them is the news. On our national airwaves, Pastors Hagee and Parsley scream for the blood of Muslims, shovel Jews into the pit of Armageddon, call for beating gay people to death, and that's religious programming. There are people in this country who will not vote for Barack Obama because he's a black man. But that's old school craziness. Today, there are folks out there thinking new crazy thoughts, put in their minds by the media. Don't vote for Obama because he's a Muslim. And did you see his extremist Christian preacher on the news the other day? On Face the Nation the other morning, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich echoed the extreme rhetoric of the right wing to decry the Supreme Court's recent decision restoring the right of habeas corpus petitions to Guantanamo detainees, charging, Newt did, that the decision would, quote, cost us a city, end quote. So, Newt believes if we restore the Constitution of the United States, we lose a city to a terrorist attack. Let's look up the definition of delusional. Having a fixed false belief that is resistant to reason or confrontation with actual fact. I think Newt has to go over there and sit with the crazy people. I've often said that 11 out of 10 Americans are mentally ill. But according to a study that came out in 2005, the National Comorbidity Survey replication, I'm not that far off. U.S. leads in mental illness, lags in treatment. Although parallel studies in 27 other countries are not yet complete, the new numbers suggest that the United States is poised to rank number one globally for mental illness. One quarter of all Americans met the criteria for having a mental illness within the past year, and fully a quarter of those had a serious disorder that significantly disrupted their ability to function day to day. I still think their numbers are way too low. How would the survey rate Pastors Hagee and Parsley, or their flock, or the people who would never vote for a black man, and don't forget the estranged Hillary voters migrating over to McCain? They have to stand over there with the crazy people, too. The political discourse in this country has warped into something unimaginable to a voter from 1952. From Kennedy versus Nixon to Carter versus Reagan, presidential contests were primarily about competing ideologies. But by 2000, the ideological divide had hardened down straight partisan lines. George Bush was the Republican. Al Gore was the Democrat. That's all you needed to know. The campaign rhetoric was almost superfluous. In 2004, we saw a huge shift. It was no longer a matter of partisanship. The 2004 election was the smart versus stupid election. You didn't have to be that smart to see that the Bush presidency had completely failed, but you had to be really stupid not to notice it. Four short years later, this election is no longer in smart versus stupid territory. We've gone that last extra step. This election is sane people versus crazy people. As reported by Crooks and Liars last month, after almost 8 years of the George W. Bush administration and 6 years of complete Republican control, there is not one single policy Republicans can point to and say, this was a success. Anyone who pulls the lever for a Republican president in 2008 has got to be out of their mind. By the way, if you want to register to vote in Florida, in the Florida ballot, you must check a box on the form that says you're not crazy. Crazy people follow that rule all the time. But to answer your question, how did we, the American people, get to the point where we do nothing? Gangsters control the executive and judicial branches of government. The legislative branch has turned its back on the people. The corporate-controlled media lies to us. And way too many of us have been driven crazy. The solution? I keep buying Rolaids in those huge bottles and wait for the rest of us to get it together enough to just sit down and do nothing. I learned a long time ago that it's impossible to talk to crazy people. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling, who promise you 18 billion barrels of oil will solve everything. Now don't email me and ask me for a copy of this. We now have them available free of charge by going to MikeMalloy.com or NovaMRadio.com. I guess it's NovaMRadio.com. Clicking on the Malloy program thingy, I don't know, you'll find it and you'll see the link where we list all the other stuff that we talk about on this program. And we do that so you can click the links and say, well, I'm going to find out if that son of a bitch was lying. Where is that goddamn? Oh my God, he's telling the truth. Well, I don't know. So you can now get this. Tonight's is titled "We Live in Crazy Land." James writes in, Mike, did you see the news of the Japanese development of a car that runs on water? I think I saw something about that the other day, wasn't it, James? The technology, he writes, apparently releases the hydrogen molecules and H2O in a way that produces electrical power. 1 liter of water enables the vehicle to run for 1 hour at 50 miles an hour. A major company, Honda, is interested in this in a big way. This sounds too good to be true, but we shall see. Why is this not on the network newscasts? James asks. Rhetorically, obviously. Instead, we have Grandpa McCain talking about building dozens of nuclear power plants and turning the Florida and California coastlines into Houston, Texas. When will this madness and greed end? Never mind. I can see, James writes, the not-too-distant future with the Japanese and maybe the Chinese selling cars, small cars, that run on tap water for about 10 grand. And the big American SUVs will be found to be ideal for one purpose, as shelter for all the homeless ex-auto workers in this country. James. Now, regarding this madness about drilling off the coast of Florida, the coast of California, the coast of wherever, or in the stupid polar bear habitat up there. Are the polar bear? No polar bears? Okay, what are they? Big deer-looking thing. What are those? Mooses? Elkses? It seems like every Republican in the country is now flip-flopping because the crazy man, the psychopathic son of a bitch who runs the country, Dick Cheney, is insisting on this offshore drilling. We'll have that for you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Of ice that literally melt away when summer comes.
But we're never gonna survive unless we get a little crazy.
Well, that won't be necessary anymore, will it, Chuckle Nuts, huh? You don't need roads of ice because there isn't any more ice, dumbass. Anyway, all this talk about offshore drilling. Yesterday, McCrazy proposed lifting the federal ban on offshore oil drilling in Florida. He said, quote, "There are areas off our coast that should be open to exploration and exploitation, my friends, and I hope we can take the first step, my friends, by lifting the moratoria." He did the right plural of moratorium. Son of a bitch. Now, that, of course, is a 180 from his previous support of the ban. As the Energy Information Administration noted, lifting, and where did I get this? Did I get this from Crooks and Liars? Did I get this from Think Progress? I don't know. One of the two. As the Energy Information Administration noted, lifting the offshore drilling moratoria would have only a minor impact on production and prices. But some Florida conservatives, it says here, are jumping on the McCain plan anyway. Governor Charlie Crist, widely considered a possible McCain running mate, as late as last week opposed the drilling. But today, today he flip-flopped and announced he supports McCain. Do you remember, Truth Seekers, at the Democratic or at the Republican convention when these sick, brain-dead Republican delegates all wore flip-flops, and my favorite from this was the 2004 election is when they all wore the little bandages that the purple that symbolized the purple hearts worn by wounded veterans. You rancid bastards. God, have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate you. I just hate you. I hate you to a depth and breadth and width my soul doth eat. Chris said last week, he was asked the question, Governor, are you dropping your opposition to drilling off Florida's coast for oil? Chris, I am not. No. Number one, I don't like it. That was last week. Today. Well, what we ought to be willing to do is study it. Reaching a conclusion about what is right or not right at this juncture is hard to do. And Senator Mel Martinez, Republican of Florida, who was once allegedly joined at the hip with Bill Nelson, the Democrat from Florida, in opposing offshore oil drilling, he linked up with McCain today, too. He said, well, I think it's about providing enough resources where the states want to do it. The governor seems to have agreed with him on drilling, and I kind of agree with him, so maybe things are changing in that regard. Now, quick pop quiz. What is the number one revenue-producing aspect of Florida? No other than drugs. Right, tourism. And for that reason, Florida politicians, Democrats and Republicans have worked for a quarter of a century to keep the drilling ban in force. Because why? Because the entire goddamn state is a coastline! Except that little piece that joins here with Georgia. And that is just pure Redneckville. But the rest of it, beaches, sand, sun, tourists, money, dollars. So for a quarter of a century, Florida politicians have, even Jebby Bush. MSNBC reported today, quote, no Republicans in Florida have gotten elected statewide without endorsing the moratorium on offshore oil drilling. If Governor Crist tries to rationalize the McCain decision, then we'll really find out just how much he wants to be on that ticket. End quote. Thank you, MSNBC. Jesus Christ, did you pull yourself away from the wake of Tim Russert to actually report something? Wow! Way to go, guys. Offshore drilling. And that oil, the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve, or as Bush calls it, ANWR, most people with any sense whatsoever, maybe on the level of a prairie milkweed, knows where that oil will go. It will not come to the lower 48. That's us down here. Hi! Hi! No. It will go where the oil companies decide it will go. Now, where do you think that would be? Quickly now. This is pop quiz. Go ahead. It's a two-syllable word. It's a country. Go. India is three. Come on. Yes! China! You did it! Son of a bitch! Go to the front of the class. Wow! I am impressed. I am so impressed. These answers are just flowing tonight. And this one. Have I got time for this? No. No, I don't. I have a Barack Obama story here that you may have a bit of a problem with. And then, of course, news is out now. It's in the New York Times tomorrow, and it's in the International Herald Tribune tonight. Four Western oil companies are in the final stages of negotiations this month on contracts, so it will return them to Iraq. 36 years after losing their oil concession to nationalization as the greatest threat to peace in the Middle East since Hitler, Saddam Hussein rose to power. ExxonMobil, Shell, Total, and BP, the original partners of the Iraq Petroleum Company, along with Chevron, have been in talks with Iraq's oil ministry for no-bid contracts. Following the Kellogg, Brown & Root, Dick Cheney, Halliburton model. No-bid contracts to take over Iraq's oil fields. Woo! The deals are expected to be announced on June 30th. Son of a bitch! Here we go! All right! We won! 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 Seven past the hour. Welcome back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. The Barack Obama story, I guess I should drop this in as, just kind of humor into the program tonight since we are so definitely lacking in humor. The headline, this is from Salon. The headline says, volunteers blocked Muslims from being seen with Obama. Ooh, Muslims were asked to remove their headscarf, the hijab, at an Obama rally. Here's the story. Apparently, Barack Obama's campaign, or at least some low-level people within it, is more worried about the persistent rumors about his religion than it lets on. Politico's Ben Smith reports that before Obama's rally in Detroit on Monday, two Muslim women were told they'd have to remove their headscarves, which would have made their religious beliefs clear. The scarves would have. One of the two women, Heba Aref, a 25-year-old lawyer, said, quote, I was coming to support him, and I felt like I was discriminated against by the very person who was supposed to be bringing this change, who I could really relate to. The message that I thought was delivered to us was that they do not want him associated with Muslims or Muslim supporters, end quote. Two separate volunteers in separate incidents were involved. One volunteer reportedly gave an explicitly political reason for turning one of the women away. But Bill Burton, a Barack Obama spokesman, says the incidents don't reflect campaign policy, and the campaign has apologized to both women. Burton said, quote, this is, of course, not the policy of the campaign. It is offensive and counter to Obama's commitment to bring Americans together and simply not the kind of campaign we run. We sincerely apologize for the behavior of these volunteers, end quote. And Bill sent this to me. I'm sorry, Barack Obama campaign, but you're starting to sound like the Hillary Clinton campaign or the Bill Clinton campaign or the George Bush campaign. You know, I'm sorry. It was a low level, volunteer. I didn't know anything about it. That's not our policy. We don't do that. No. How is it that so many low level campaign volunteers or E3s working at a prison in Iraq, the low people, the little people. How is it that the little people somehow wind up making profound decisions on their own that has a direct impact and horrific consequences? How does that happen? How does an E3 decide what kinds of torture to use or to use torture at all? How does a Barack Obama volunteer decide to deny entry to a rally to a couple of women wearing Muslim headscarves? How does that happen? What? Anybody have any clues on that? How does that happen? How do these people decide that they can decide? Well, you know the answer to that, right? Now, regarding a ward in Japan writes in here regarding the offshore oil drilling, Ward writes, the U.S. Energy Information Administration. We have something called that? The Energy Information Administration? Wow. recently did a detailed study of the likely outcome of offshore drilling for their annual Energy Outlook 2007. It's titled Impacts of Increased Access to Oil and Natural Gas Resources in the Lower 48 Federal Outer Continental Shelf. How's that? How's that for a title? Anyway, here is the conclusion. Quote, the projections in the Outer Continental Shelf access case indicate that access to the Pacific, Atlantic, and Eastern Gulf of Mexico regions would not have a significant impact on domestic crude oil and natural gas production or prices before 2030. And the impact of the projected 7% increase in lower 48 oil production that might result in 2030, thanks to opening the Outer Continental Shelf, is, wait for it, any impact on average wellhead prices is expected to be insignificant. Any impact on average wellhead prices is expected to be insignificant. Well, my goodness, then that means there probably would not be a reduction in price at the gas pump, whatever it is, in, 2030, huh? Now, this is the result of drilling in these offshore oil magic places. 2030, what's the year today? Is this 2008? Why, my goodness, let me see, where's the calculator? 6, 4 times 9 is 23, 8 times 9. Well, that's 22 years from now. Well, I'll be damned. Does John McCain read? And then Ward includes this story from Reuters. The U.S. Senate on Tuesday blocked debate of a bill to offer about $17.7 billion in tax incentives for consumers to build renewable energy sources like windmills and solar arrays and buy plug-in cars that run on electricity rather than gasoline. The Senate blocked debate on the bill to offer the tax incentives. The Energy Independence and Tax Relief Act of 2008 would have extended a tax credit to build windmills by 1 year through December 31st, 2009, and extend for 3 years similar credits for renewable energy sources like biomass, geothermal, landfill gas, and trash combustion. End quote from the Reuters story. So, Ward writes, they won't stop the tax breaks for big oil, but they will prevent anyone from getting a tax break on alternatives. No matter which party we turn to, Ward writes, as my dear old dad used to say, quote, we're screwed, glued, and tattooed. End of quote from Dad. Well, I didn't know a thing about the Energy Independence and Tax Relief Act of 2008. Did you, Truth Seeker? Obviously, Ward in Japan knew about it, but I didn't know a thing about it. God damn it. Was that the story they bumped to tell me about Tiger Woods' knee? Could that be? I'll bet it was. I'll bet it was. I'll bet that's the story that was on the show rundown, and somebody came in and say, wait a minute, hold that story. We have breaking news here on Tiger Woods' knee. Get rid of that stupid-ass story about, 22 years from now, gas, oil. I don't know what the hell it's about. Something about off-shelf, shore, shimming, booming, blah, blah, boompa. Get rid of it. Kill it. Deep six it. Ice it. It's over. Let's talk about what the American people really want to know about, and that is Tiger Woods' knee. Speaking of Tiger Woods' knee, I want you to go to my website or go to the Molloy Show Topics when the program's over tonight. I have something up there that was sent to me about a Tiger Woods development in Dubai that you are going to choke on. Yeah, you'll choke. I'm sorry. I don't mean to do it to you this late in the evening, for those of you here in the East. Maybe here in the East, wait till tomorrow. Those of you who listen in the West, go to the website when the program's over tonight. Go to novamradio.com and go to the Malloy part and yada, yada. And look at the Tiger Woods Dubai link. Click on it. There are pictures there. For those of you who don't want to spend a lot of time reading, there are really nice pictures. Ward, thank you. I appreciate it. I didn't know anything about the $17.7 billion in tax incentives, not giveaways, tax incentives for consumers to build renewable energy sources like windmills and solar arrays and to buy plug-in cars that run on electricity rather than gasoline. And the Senate blocked debate. No, that's it. It's all over. Get out of town. Uh-uh. No, 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 no. Ain't going to have none of this crap. No, no. You can buy oil and gas or, I don't know, goddamn freeze to death or walk, you know, whatever floats your boat.
We can't afford our gasoline. The prices have become obscene. Unleaded regular, forget about supreme. We can't afford our gasoline. We can't afford our gasoline. The prices have become obscene. You'll get screwed at the pump, so bring your Vaseline. We can't afford our gasoline.
There's a shortage of energy in one of the major cities in Iowa. It is real. It is not an imagination.
Oh, yeah, okay. Alex in New York City wants to know why I'm so surprised about the deal with the Iraqis, or deal with Iraq. Will bring back these huge oil giants. Alex writes, Mike, why are you so upset? This should have come as no surprise. The Bush cartel has been planning this surprise. The only problem is that in order to secure the oil fields, U.S. troops will be expendable for the protection of the oil pipelines. In addition, the existing oil pipelines will be attacked over and over again by the Iraqi resistance movement once the deal is officially announced. And then he adds, Mike, why did you not play today's Rose Garden tirade on drilling oil offshore? There's a slip of the tongue that we all should be up in arms about. We talked about that, Alex, about doing some of that sound and decided, no, I'd like to know what the slip of the tongue is. You are such a tease. What did he say? Did he say the F word? If he didn't say the F bomb or the N word, it's really, you know, doesn't matter all that much. That would be a slip of the tongue. ExxonMobil, Shell, Total, and BP, along with Chevron, a number of smaller oil companies, are in talks with Iraq's oil ministry for no-bid contracts to get their hands on Iraq's oil fields, according to ministry officials, oil company officials, and an American diplomat. The no-bid contracts are unusual for the industry, and the offers prevailed over others by more than 40 companies, including companies in Russia, China, and India.
Really? You mean to tell me that the Russian, Chinese, and Indian companies were not allowed in?
Huh? ExxonMobil? Well, there's a surprise. Shell? Huh? BP? Wait a minute. What happened to Beyond Petroleum? Ah, that little green crap they put up on their commercials. Look, a little green flower. Ugh. We're going to harness the sun. You know, some other time. Not now. Not now. Don't distract us. There's rock. Oil. Ah!
And Chevron.
No-bid contracts given to American and British oil companies. Well, my goodness. The no-bid contracts are unusual for the industry.
I like this part. There was suspicion among many in the Arab world and among parts of the American public.
and the Arab world, not the entire goddamn planet, that the United States had gone to war in Iraq precisely to secure the oil wealth these contracts seek to extract. Who wrote this? What Bush sucker wrote this? Andrew Kramer for the New York Times? Hey, Andrew, get up off your knees, okay? There was suspicion among many in the Arab, a suspicion in the Arab world and among parts of the American public that the United States had gone to war precisely to secure the oil wealth, these contracts. See, what about the 3 million people who demonstrated in Rome, Italy? Oh, never mind. Jesus Christ, I hate these people. I don't know why I ever quote from the New York Times. For an industry being frozen out of new ventures in the world's dominant oil-producing countries, from Russia to Venezuela, Iraq offers a rare and prized opportunity. While enriched by $140 per barrel oil, the oil major companies are also struggling to replace their reserves as ever more of the world's oil patch becomes off limits. Governments in countries like Bolivia and Venezuela are nationalizing their oil industries, or seeking a larger share of the record profits for their national budgets. Well, how dare the bastards! I added that part. Russia and Kazakhstan have forced the major companies to renegotiate contracts. Well, what do you expect from a bunch of communist thugs, right? Jesus God. Well, there you have it. What was it called originally? Operation Iraqi Liberation. Oil. Oh, man. How long ago was that? 2002? Yeah, 6 years ago. I can remember all the demonstrations. And I and a lot of people on the so-called left wonder why liberals or Democrats or normal people don't get take to the streets and demonstrate anymore. Well, we know why. It doesn't mean anything. 500,000 people used to be enough to stop a war. 500,000 people used to be enough to interfere with the, at least with the acceptance of the development of nuclear weapons. 500,000 people now. You want to affect policy in the United States or any place else? See if you can get 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 million people into the streets or to just sit down and, oh, never mind.
In the lead when it comes to energy independence. We're in the lead when it comes to global climate change, and we'll stay that way.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, you dumbass. Oh. 26 before the hour. Let's do some phone calls here for a moment. Starting with Kathy, who is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. Say, when last we talked,
yeah,
the distraction was steroid use in the baseball players.
Yeah.
It's good to see that they're staying with the same theme, Tiger.
Yeah, Tiger Woods' knees. I'm sure it's painful and...
But yeah, very, very painful, but much more important than what's really going on.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is what, you know, anyone who doubts the absolute uselessness, worthlessness, and poisonous of news media, especially television, just has to take a look at a newscast that is only limited to 22 minutes anyway, supposed to cover all of the pertinent events nationally and globally, and they have as one of their stories Tiger Woods' torn ligament or hairline fractured shin bone. I mean, this is that should put to rest forever the argument about whether or not what news media do in this country is useless.
But as we spoke last, it's all about distraction.
Yeah, well, that's
true. We must remain distracted.
And forgetful. We have to forget,
yes.
Which is that's the primary function of television, to make you forget. But you really called about...
What I really called about is I listen to you night after night, and my blood pressure goes up, and I get myself all in a lather, and I have no place to take it. My question to you is, what do we do to fix this? You know, I plan on voting for Obama, but you present some very good points. You know, is he with us? Is he against us? Is he in disguise? So as truth seekers, where do we go? What do we do to change?
We line up and follow you. What? As far as Barack Obama's concerned, you know, I've been saying from the get-go that he was the lesser of two, the lesser corporate-oriented, and I may be wrong on that, of two corporate candidates.
Yes.
Presented by the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I also have said that his message, his flowing rhetoric, inspires me, makes me feel like, hot damn, there's a chance.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, then I get into the, nitty gritty, or the lather, as you put it, and find out that, you know, maybe my, I almost called him a white knight, is not so white knightish after all. So I don't know where to go or where to turn. And I don't know what to do. The only solution I can think of, Kathy, is what I've been advocating for about 3 years now. And that is that, if we're really serious about hating our torture state and hating what is going on in this country, then we must do what the Indians did when the British decided that they would control salt production in India, and that is the Salt March, led by, of course, we don't have a Gandhi. The closest thing we have to Gandhi is, I don't know who, John Stewart. So what we need to do is sit down, just sit down. If enough people in this country would literally just sit down, whether it's on commuter trains or on the interstate heading into another day of breathing toxic fumes in downtown as you go to work or in your backyard or at the swimming pool or wherever it is, just sit down and stay there for maybe, I don't know, a day. Have a friend bring you a cheese sandwich and some tap water and just sit there and just say no.
Good old fashioned sit in.
Yeah, just to sit down. Just, you know, time to pour the rage into the machine rather than have the machine leaving us enraged. But I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, but there's an answer that's the best I can come up with, because they have more guns and jails than we do. And
right.
It's clear that the Constitution of the United States is no longer applicable with American citizens. So where does that leave us? It leaves us quiet, subdued, and whipped. So what to do in response? Well,
yeah, what to do in response? As you said, you know, it used to be 500,000 people, and, you know, basically we had an uprising, but now we have, how do we motivate? You know, where do we go? How do we motivate?
I don't know. If I go back to what Saul Alinsky said years and years ago, organize, 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 you know, you just reach out and take hold of that hand who in turn reaches out and takes hold of that hand and until you have a chain of millions of people. We need an Abby Hoffman. We need a Jerry Rubin. We need people who attempt to levitate the Pentagon. We need people who put together political parties called the Yippies or the Zippies. You know, we need some
insanity has become too packaged. It's a government subsidized program now. What mm-hmm. we need is street insanity, where we retain our insanity. I'm referring to. We need street insanity, because insanity has become a government authorized a product. But we need the kind of thing that the yippies did. We need like I said, Jerry Rubin and Paul Krasner and Abby Hoffman. Of course, two out of those three are dead. So I don't know. I'm willing to line up behind you, Kathy. You lead us.
I would love to be that Abby Hoffman.
Yeah, but you're Kathy from Madison, which is just as effective. All right, think about it. If you come up with a solution, you let me know, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you, Kathy. I appreciate you checking in. I don't have any answers. All I have are more questions. I don't know. We have a whole group of, I think we're up to 100 listeners now. And out of those 100 people, somebody surely can come up with the solution. You know, the solution, all capital letters and sparkles on it. I think of the Salt March. That's all I can think of. Rob is calling from Iron Mountain, Minnesota, listening on the Internet. Rob, welcome to the program.
You got thousands of listeners. I'm one of them, and I am, one of those people that donated to Nova M.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. At the same time, there's an Anwar. And there's a caribou, and it's called the porcupine herd.
The porcupine herd.
Yeah, and do Americans really think Bush is doing this for us, as far as opening up Anwar? Or is he doing it for the oil companies?
Well, the oil companies have kind of dictated they've framed the discussion, because most of us refer to it as Anwar, which is an oil company term, that is to desensitizes, you know. What's an Anwar? I don't know. What is the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge?
The one thing I found out today, and the whole thing is I got to be able to tell you, Tom Hartman, I think he's one of your friends. He had Peter DeFazio on there. What is he, a senator or a congressman?
Yes.
Anyway, he talked about the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska,
right.
Proven reserves of over 13 billion barrels.
Right.
And the whole thing is that the oil companies went in there, they drilled the wells, and then they left. They didn't tap into it. The next thing is where, guess what, Alaska pipeline capacity per day, 2 million barrels, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're only using 800,000 of that capacity right now. If they extended the pipeline a little bit farther to the west,
mm-hmm.
guess what? They could be able to take and fill the Alaska pipeline with 2 million barrels of oil a day for the next 20 years, 10% of the American consumption. And the oil companies haven't taken advantage of this.
But you do see in the big picture of breathable air and tillable soil and drinkable water, that all that oil is not the way to go.
I don't want it to be that way, but at
right.
the same time, right now, guess what? Because of our failed policy since Jimmy Carter, you know, Jimmy Carter put us on the right path, I think, don't you?
Well, he started some conservation ideas, but even Carter was a big advocate of nuclear power. He did some things that tried to
change the course.
Yeah, change the course, sedate us a little bit from our drunken orgy with petroleum, but it didn't last.
The only thing I'm going for, Mike, is that guess what? You know, I mean, the whole thing is 18 million barrels off the coast.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, Bush wants us to give that away to the oil companies. The only thing is guess what? Here they have that big oil reserve, 50,000 square miles up there in Alaska, and they haven't given us any of that oil yet. Why is that? What do you think?
Well, guess what? I think it's because they're all insane.
They want to make money?
Well, that too, but they become insane. I don't know what else to say, Rob. That the oil industry is an industry that is killing, suffocating the planet.
Yeah.
And we keep supporting them. You and I are paying billions of dollars in tax money to subsidize these killers. And they continue to pump oil out of the ground, continue to refine it, continue to put it out there where junkies and addicts like you and me can continue to suck it up and continue to smother ourselves. I don't know what to do, Rob. I really don't. But guess what? We're out of time. Thanks, Rob. Take care. Before the hour, thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your program, telephone calls. Billy Foster is our technical director, Ben Birch, the podcast manager, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence, Bob Alexander, resident philosopher, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And to Minova and founding members, you can now watch a weekly video of moi, your humble and obedient servant. All you have to do is log on to NovaMradio.com, click on videos. First there's a step in there. You have to go to the member section, I guess. Click on videos to watch me read an email uncensored from my studio here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. And I think we're putting up a new one. There's one up there now, the first one. We're putting the second one up tomorrow. We're going to try to fix the lighting. For all of you who suggested that I look like I was reading something in Osama bin Laden's cave, so we're going to change the lighting a little bit. But you have to understand here in the North Georgia Mountains, at least in the foothills, it's sometimes hard to get light into a subterranean studio. But we'll try. It'll be up probably Friday. There's one up there now. Take a look. They're hysterically funny. Marge is calling from Indiana. Marge, welcome to the program.
Excuses, excuses, always excuses.
I know. Is it your birthday again?
No. But you know that I raised my son to be a Cub fan.
Yes, I do. He is the Cubs fan, and he lives on the West Coast now, right?
Yeah, and God love him, he stayed true. And he raised me to be a Celtics fan. I got to tell you, there's smiles all around. Because those overgrown leprechauns pounded the hell out of the Lakers last night.
Boy, didn't they.
By 39 points. You know, the only guy that was missing, God love him, and he's someplace else, to light up his celebratory cigar was Fred Auerbach.
Yeah, damn. Well, that's true. That's true. He was gone.
It was kind of neat. Anyway, our good friend in the White House, when exactly did he withdraw from the international court? It was early on when the war was starting, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was Cheney who acted as the gopher and notified whoever you notify, I don't know, that we were pulling out of that international criminal court, yeah.
So all this stuff that they're pulling is premeditated. It wasn't accidental.
Well,
wasn't
They knew what they were doing. Well, absolutely. I mean, that's the reason I pulled out of traffic court here in Georgia, so that I can speed and double park and leave the scenes of accidents.
They let you do that in Georgia?
Well, not really.
Just checking. I thought maybe I plan on moving or something. If you could speed all you want and then let you get away with it.
Yeah, all of this was utterly and absolutely premeditated. They knew exactly what they were doing. By pulling out of the International Criminal Court, by disengaging from the Geneva Convention, by dumping all international treaties and agreements, and then having these five slimy attorneys write the memos that gave them permission to do this, they covered all their asses. They were just totally covered. We didn't break any laws. What laws? What laws are you referring to? Huh? What treaties? Huh? What are you talking about?
Oh. Alongside the game last night, AFI?
Yeah.
I think it was talking about top 10 movies in 10 different genres. One of the movies that was in there, and I thought, oh, geez, Hollywood does come around every once in a while, was Judgment at Nuremberg.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen the American Film Institute's lists before, and I know Judgment at Nuremberg was there. I just didn't remember how high up was it. How high? It was in the top 10?
In the category that it was in, it was number one.
Uh-huh.
They had 10 different categories, you know, like musicals and dramas and whatever.
I
can't tell you for sure what category that was in, but it was number one. I think you could go on AFI, whatever, and check the ones that they had last night.
Well, I just wish that every American could revisit that film. And
we're lousy on history, Mike. You realize that.
Of course. Of course. And watch when the prosecutor says to, who was it? Was it Marlene Dietrich?
Maximilian Schnell or whatever his name was.
Schnell. Didn't he? Is that the one where he said, is it not true that you are a liar? Or
no.
is that a different movie?
The one, I don't know. He was the one that said, but the people didn't know what they were doing.
Oh.
That's the speech that they showed him giving last night, if I'm picking the right face, you know.
Well, probably so. And that's what I was talking about earlier tonight. This is, the American people, are following the model set by the German people. we had no idea. What? They were cooking these Jews?
Oh.
No. And the homosexuals? No. But the Jews? Oh, my God.
And the gypsies?
And the gypsies? No, 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 no. Not in my country, no. We are the Ludwig von Beethoven. We are, you know, I mean,
right.
Jesus.
There was another guy that I heard yesterday. I don't know who he is, though. It's Jerry Sprecher. Sprecher, I think.
Yeah.
He was talking about the Commodities Future Trading Commission.
Yeah.
CFTC. You familiar with that one?
Yes.
It's sort of a prelude to the Intercontinental Exchange, you know, ICE. It's supposed to be a foreign exchange.
Right.
It can't be regulated by the U.S. Well, damn. Guess where one of their main offices is?
Where?
You could probably throw a rock at it from your North Georgia mountains.
Oh, really?
In Atlanta.
No.
Yeah. God. These people, I swear to God.
I have one question for you very quickly because we're out of time. Why are they called the Boston Celtics? We all know that the right way to pronounce that word is Celtic.
You're going to ask me that question. I don't know.
I don't either. Marge, we're out of time. Listen,
take care.
Behave yourself, all right?
Well, I'm too old to do anything else.
Well, that's true, too. Behave yourself. All right. Thank you, Marge.
Take care.
All right. It's taken. Marge in Indiana. From the Boston Celtics to International Commodities Exchange. You got to love that woman. You got to love that woman. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.